Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the October 19 edition of Commodity Week. Well, the cattle on feed numbers finally show some rationing. We'll discuss what, if anything, it might mean to the corn market today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we were scheduled to talk with the president and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council. He's not available this evening. Our panelists in studio today include Aaron Curtis of Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois, and Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Mike Zuzolo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting is in his Lafayette, Indiana office. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, and from time to time we ask for your financial support, and, well, this is one of them. If you can dial in now, it would be really good at 217-244-9455. We're looking for 15 calls today for support of Commodity Week and the agricultural programming that comes to you from willag.org. It matters not if you're listening on the radio or on the web. Dial this number now, 217-244-9455. The good folks at Risk Management Commodities Consulting in West Lafayette, Indiana, will put another $500 in the kitty if we hear from 15 of you and you say, "I support Commodity Week." Dial the number now at 217-244-9455 or pledge online at willag.org. Look for the red donate button in the upper right-hand side of the page.
Support for Commodity Week comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at agrigoldgiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Well, let's open our discussion today with this question. Aaron Curtis, how much of the corn harvest do you suppose is left in the hands of farmers to still market this fiscal year? So how much of the corn that they've harvested already do they still own?
Well, I think a portion anyway. It's hard to put a number on that. I think early we saw some pretty aggressive farmer selling across the scale, especially in central Illinois, even farther south, as they and prices were a little bit better then. Of course, we were still hanging upwards closer in that high $7 area up towards $8. I think now that harvest is past, those guys are being a little more willing to store this crop. I think money is, you know, probably not going to be a big issue here as we move to the fall. So probably looking for sales after the first of the year from the producer crowd, or and if or the price gets back to that $8 area. So I think we have seen some good farmer movement earlier, but boy, in these last few weeks, there just hasn't been a whole lot of stuff moving, Todd.
Greg Johnson of the Andersons.
I think a lot of farmers got a third of a normal crop sold ahead of time. And then, of course, with the drought, we had a half a crop, so that one-third turned into two-thirds. And then there was a little bit more selling at the higher levels. So I would say we're probably three-fourths sold. Farmers still own about a fourth of what they produced this year.
And Mike Zuzolo.
Yeah, I think, Greg, in the central Corn Belt, I think Greg's numbers match up with what I'm hearing, 20 to 30% left, Todd. But in the eastern Corn Belt, Ohio's having some better yields, it sounds like, in corn, not just beans, but also in corn in some key regions. And I think, you know, in the western Corn Belt, we've heard a lot about the Minnesota and South Dakota and even parts of Iowa crop being good. Nebraska clients that I work with that are irrigated actually have reported some record yields in central west Nebraska. And so I would say in the western and eastern sections, probably they have more like 40 or 50% left.
I have two originators here in the studio with me, buyers that is, at a couple of different grain elevators in central Illinois. And I want to ask you, both of you, just a question, because it seems to me there's some unique things that are happening this year. Early in the harvest season, when we were in southern Illinois, we know full well that they were loading and shipping back towards central Illinois from the Boot Heel. And now it seems that there's still corn moving to different and unique places. What kinds of things have you heard?
Well, I think that's going to be an interesting challenge, I guess, all year, or at least something different that we're not used to, of corn moving in different directions. You talked about corn moving from the southern harvest, which was pretty good, up into the north to help feed the processor markets. And then now, you know, more of the southern or northern corn harvest, where they have good yields up in that Minnesota-Dakota area, is moving farther south to try to feed those markets where quality is more of an issue. So I think those traditional grain movement patterns that we're used to are really going to be challenged this year.
Yeah, we've heard the same thing with the exports down. Some of that corn that typically goes to the Pacific Northwest is now moving from the Minnesota-Dakota area down south into Illinois and places like that. The other thing that's happening is there's been some corn rumored to be imported from Argentina into the Carolinas. So that's another movement that we don't normally see.
Well, are there anything in those two things, the import of Argentine corn, and I don't think there will be, but more the unique movement of corn in the Midwest from one place to the other, that it normally wouldn't go, because corn would go out of central Illinois and not into central Illinois, that would allow a producer to take advantage of the marketplace in any form? And I don't know, I'm guessing no for a central Illinois farmer, but maybe you have some other ideas.
I think basis levels will be very strong. I think you'll be able to see 30 to 40 over, maybe even 50 over basis levels. It kind of depends on the futures market. If the futures market does a lot of the work, I think $8 is one of those magic numbers that we'll see a lot of movement. And right now we're in that $7.50 to $7.60 range. So we're not quite to $8 cash corn, but it wouldn't take much. But if we don't see that in the futures, I think you'll continue to see a pretty strong basis level as we get into the winter.
Yeah, I think Greg's right. I think it's more of a basis and maybe even a spread play as opposed to a futures market or flat price. I think it's going to be a more affection on how the basis is, especially as we look at those traditional basis values, and especially if you look at the map of the Corn Belt in the whole, where you're going to see some of those levels. You got traditionally very weak basis levels in that Minnesota-Dakota's areas due to the fact that they've had a pretty good harvest, and a lot of stuff's coming to town and those kind of things, and taking advantage of some of those basis levels as you move a little farther south. But I agree with Greg. I think it's probably going to be more of a basis factor here as we move forward.
As a consultant, Mike, how do you deal with such a difficult problem?
Well, I think the importance of the South American weather has taken on a whole new meaning, Todd, and I'll give the example of what the guys were talking about with Argentine corn and coming in the southeast. Southeast poultry areas, if the South American weather, i.e. Argentine corn planting, continues to become more and more of a concern and that optimal planting window is closed, then all of a sudden you could make a case that the South American weather has shut down the corn competition coming out of South America. That then says you're not going to get as much competition coming into the Southeast and into Wilmington bulk specifically, and so therefore your unit trains that go into the Southeast will become a viable objective again and a good basis play or a good cash play again. If weather doesn't straighten out, if weather does straighten out in South America, and what the guys were talking about, what I heard while they were talking was that what the cash market is going to probably mean less demand at the livestock side, so there's going to be less trains to feedlots in the Southwest, less trains to the Southeast poultry areas. That corn then goes into the river. It more likely goes into the export market, and so your river is probably going to be charged up more in terms of basis versus what you get in the interior off those unit trains.
But Mike, we haven't really seen the export market at all.
I know, but I think it's coming. I think this is where I think we need to be a little bit ahead of the curve. I was on the phone a lot and on the email a lot with some European contacts this week, and their issue in Europe is almost as significant and as serious with their feed wheat and their wheat situation and their corn situation as it is here. I think it's just a matter of time before these two converge, and I think that's where it goes back to the South American weather. That may speed up the process. So I think the demand is coming, and I think Ukraine was a big piece of the domino starting to fall.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to watch that export program here, especially as we get into the first of the year, if Brazil does start to back off on some of their export interest or available supplies that can move into the channels there that traditionally the U.S. Markets have been able to capture. I think basis standpoint, I think that's one of the things you got to watch. The river's going to have to be a little more competitive going forward in order to kind of compete against that processor market. Otherwise, processor probably can kind of sit and lay in the weeds like it has much of the last 2 or 3 weeks and just kind of stand there.
And one thing, and this may be a central Illinois phenomenon, but I can tell you that there's very little corn that got stored in bins this year. So typically there's plenty of corn that will move post-harvest this year, at least in central Illinois, southern Illinois, where we had the aflatoxin concerns. You know, originally I had estimated only 15% to 20% of the bins that normally get filled with corn were getting filled this year. After talking to producers in the area, I'm lowering my number from 20 to 10. I think only 10% of the bins that normally handle corn are farmers put corn in this year. So, you know, that's another play that, you know, the corn's there now, but 3, 4, 5, 6 months from now, it may not be there. It'll be harder to find replacement bushels, at least out of central Illinois.
That would be in your east central Illinois draw, and how wide an area?
We also have a farm-to-market program where we'll buy grain from outside of our area. And even talking to those farmers in central Illinois, east central Illinois, on into Indiana, it seems to be at the aflatoxin was a big concern this year. So I would say it's a pretty big area, at least in central, east central Illinois.
Champaign and Bloomington aren't that far apart. But there is kind of a difference between how good or bad their crops might have been. Would you agree with him?
Yeah, I agree with Greg. I think that's quite a phenomenon we saw this year was all that corn that's been moved. You can kind of draw a line just north of Bloomington all the way to southern tip of Illinois, and I think that was a phenomenon that was pretty common. That aflatoxin issue really did make farmers and producers nervous, and I think they felt better with that stuff in town.
So they brought it to town, and they sold it both, right?
They had a lot of it sold already. If they didn't have it sold, it's being put in storage. I don't think a lot of it has been sold since harvest time.
Okay, we'll do wheat for them later.
Okay.
But let's deal with the guys north of that who probably do have something in the bin. Mike Zuzolo, do you have an idea of how they ought to think about marketing what they've got left?
Yeah, I mean, my basic thrust right now to the clients, Todd, and this wraps really well with the conversation, is I think cash is a lot more stable product to hold in the bin, especially if you have quality corn in the bin or even if it's commercially stored and on DP. I think the cash has less volatility to it. Futures can be an unbelievably volatile whipsaw market this next 3 months because guess what? We're heading back into a weather supply-driven market again when it comes to corn. And we're waiting for that demand to pop. And so I really like being long the cash. A lot of clients have called and said, well, what if we got to $8 futures? Sure, I'd start to pony up and let some go there, especially if the basis levels stay as good as they are right now. But generally speaking, I would not want to sell here and then re-own on the futures. I think that's the exact opposite play you want to do from my standpoint.
Okay, Mike, cash is king and good to hang on to, but what if rationing begins to take place and the cattle and feed numbers tell us it might be?
Well, rationing already is. I think that's where I'm trying to play it from a three-month window between now and January, February. I think that the downside in the cash market is limited because I think we're coming to a point where the wheat is supportive enough to the corn that if the futures goes down, the basis brings most of that loss right back up so that you're essentially paying storage and interest in the bin for the next 3 months.
Yeah, I guess I would agree with Mike. I think that basis still has a little work to do. I think just from a kind of a big picture scenario, not to make it overly complicated, I think if we do test the upper end of that range up back towards $8, you still got some cash corn to sell. I'd probably be rewarding the market up there at that end.
I think, you know, the end users so far are showing that they still are in the market and need to buy, and the farmers have shown a pretty good reluctance to sell anything below $8. So, as Mike said, whether the futures get there or the basis gets there, you know, if the futures drop 30, 40 cents, the basis will probably improve enough to offset most of that. And so I think farmers are pretty well advised to hold on for $8 flat corn, flat price corn.
We are listening to the October 19 edition of Commodity Week. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes, and we'll continue our conversation about the commodity markets with Aaron Curtis and Greg Johnson and Mike Zuzlo. Here are the way some of the numbers did settle up in Chicago for the week. December wheat, a settlement price up 15 and three quarters at $8.72 and a half. July at $8.48 and a quarter. Was up 7 cents for the week. December corn on the nearby at 761 and a half, up 8 3/4, and the 13 crop at 634 3/4, up 0.75 cents. November beans settled at $15.34 1/4, the difference from Friday to Friday, up 11 3/4 cents on the week. November of next year for 2013 at $13.37 3/4, down 0.75 cents. December live cattle were up $1.77 1/2. November feeders up $4.15, and lean hogs were up $1.25.
From Urbana, deep in corn country, it's the game show of the stars, Password Agriculture. And here is the star of the show, Dave Dickey.
Okay, you know how to do this. Let's get started. Our contestant is Craig Cohen. Let's see how you do.
The password is deer.
Let me start you out with this. Tractor.
Combine.
Okay, let's try this one. Whitetail.
Deer.
Great, you are on a roll. Let's do one more.
The password is case.
Here we go. Brief.
Fleeting.
One more try. Lawyer.
Case.
And here is what you win. A chance to get in a drawing for either a John Deere 7730 or Case IH Magnum 315 toy tractor. And everyone listening can get into the drawing, too. Go to your phone right now and call 217-244-9455 and mention either Deere or Case to be entered into the drawing. That's 217-244-9455. And while on the phone, why not take the opportunity to make a pledge in support of WILL and the Agricultural Services.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the October 19 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Greg Johnson of the Andersons, Mike Zuzlo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, and Aaron Curtis of Midco. Just a reminder that you can dial in with your pledge of financial support. We're in the middle of our fund drive here at the public radio station on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. So no matter where you're listening or how you're listening, whether that's on one of our radio affiliates or if you're online, we do need your help. 217-244-9455. We'd like to think about the $120 a month as a fair price for Commodity Week and the closing market report and all of the other agricultural programming that comes to you on these radio stations. And if you do too, please dial in at 217-244-9455. When you dial in, tell them agriculture. Tell them one of the two code words so you can get in on a drawing for a toy tractor, either a John Deere or a Case. And the code words are Deere and Case. You can do that even if you don't happen to, give us a little cash on the way, but we'd kind of like to have the cash nonetheless. Again, the number 217-244-9455, or you can do it online at willag.org. And today we'd like to hear from at least 15 of you. I bet we can do better than that. And if we do, the folks at Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette will put another $500 in our budget. So we thank them very much for that. So we need you to dial in now or to hit that big red button up on the corner of willag.org, 217-244-9455. Well, let's continue our conversation with Aaron Curtis and Greg Johnson and Mike Zuzlo about the commodity markets. We have not gotten to the soybeans at this point. And I want to hold off on them for just a bit and take up the wheat. There are a couple of things that were happening. And Mike Zuzlo, maybe we can start with you. Wheat was up 15 and three quarters for the week in the nearby December. July was up 7. And we had two things that happened. You mentioned one of them as we closed out the show, the beginning of this show. That was that they were going to close off some exports out of the Black Sea area. And the other is that the CME group this week decided it wanted to buy the Kansas City Board of Trade. What do you think?
Well, it, you know, goes along the lines of this consolidation, and these mergers and acquisitions are probably going to get more and more common in the news here in the next quarter, I suspect, Todd. The trade so far is wondering how they will take care of the cash settlement and how they will figure out the cash price and whether the variable storage rate will go by the wayside that the CME is using for Chicago wheat and try and do something more along the lines of the Kansas City board price, which is an open and transparent number. So I think that's probably the most important thing that the wheat trade is probably going to be watching for. But it just goes, ADM came in and got a piece of GrainCorp. We've seen a lot of mergers and acquisitions, and agriculture is really moving into more consolidation, and they're trying to move more and more into Asia.
Yeah, that one was released on Friday morning, I think, that ADM purchased GrainCorp. It's an Australian wheat company, right?
Yes, exactly. And they're I think trying to replicate or duplicate something that Cargill did earlier by getting more involved in Australia so that they can be closer to the Asian rim.
Right. And then from the Andersons perspective, is the purchase of the KCBOT a good thing by the CME Group?
You know, I'm not sure if we have an opinion on that or, I haven't heard too much about it, quite frankly.
It was mostly that you deal more with soft red winter wheat as an organization than many other places that we deal with.
Right. Yeah, everything that, our headquarters are in Ohio and most of our elevators are in Michigan, Indiana, Illinois. That's basically a soft red winter wheat belt. So buying the Kansas City Board of Trade, which is hard red, it's kind of two different commodities.
All right. Let's turn our attention. We'll leave it there.
Yeah.
Do you want to? No, never mind, Aaron. soybeans. November contract this week was up 11 and three quarters cents. It settled at $15.34 and a quarter. November of next year was down three quarters at $13.37 and three quarters. I'm wondering if soybeans, which many believed at one point had the most potential to move upwards, have taken a back seat, or whether they can guide the marketplace in the near term?
Well, I think they're going to continue to be range bound here for the short term. There's still, we still have that gap below the market in November beans back to July 3rd that still acts like a little bit of a magnet in my eyes, a little bit to try to get that filled. We got into it a little bit early in the week and couldn't quite get the whole thing filled, so we'll continue to watch that. I think overall, the size of the South American crop that we keep getting reminded of, I think it's still continuing to limit the upside in soybeans here. We move forward, I think, in a broader sense, I think we're still going to be range-bound, and it sounds kind of odd to talk about just a 50-cent range in beans, but I think this 15 area to 15.50 is going to kind of hold us for the short term.
You agree with that one?
The range might be a little bit bigger, but yeah, it looks like on the charts we went up almost to 18 and we came down to 15. So, it feels like we're trying to bottom in here somewhere. The fundamentals are still really good for beans. I mean, the export sales every Thursday are very good. The problem is the funds owned over 1.2 billion bushels of beans on paper, and we only grew 2.7 billion. So they owned 40% of the crop on paper. And at the end of the quarter, into the third quarter, at the end of September, they decided to take some profits, and the funds have liquidated some of those long positions, and that's hurt the market, even though the fundamentals are still friendly. But I guess fund demand is part of that fundamental equation. Whenever they sell, for whatever reason, that makes the market go lower. So $15 seems low enough for the time being, but as Aaron said, with the better than expected crop, unless we have some weather problems somewhere, 15 to maybe 16 or 15 to 15.50, somewhere in there probably is going to be where we trade for the next month or two.
Mike, your thoughts on the oilseed?
I'm sorry?
Your thoughts on soybeans?
I think the November report's going to be really big from a standpoint of what the guys are talking about with the range-bound market. The market's trying to move into a pure weather market, but two things are holding it back right now to me, Todd. The need to figure out the financial markets first, since the beans are so closely tied via the palm oil, which just came off a three-year low, and that palm oil and crude oil tie, the palm oil Asia tie, and then also copper and that Chinese tie with copper. And so beans and the fund relationship, because of what happens in Asia, is so important. It seems like the financial markets just don't want to let go yet. So as the S&P 500 goes down, copper, gold, and crude oil starts to leak, then all of a sudden the beans look over and see that happening and say, I don't want to talk about weather right now. The other thing I think that I keep hearing, and it'd be interesting to hear what the other guys are hearing, but I continue to hear from Chicago contacts that the yields are still going up and that the November report's going to show another higher yield. And I think that's going to be probably the make or break to which way this bean market breaks out of the trend. And obviously, Center West Brazil will be another key feature, too.
November?
Yeah, I agree with Mike. I think, we have an office in Iowa, and they continue to tell us USDA is still too low on the Iowa bean yield. And I think, as areas continue to move north and, you get up into the northwestern Corn Belt, and if you look around the Internet, you saw all sorts of pictures of bean piles and I think that yield could probably still go up a little bit, too. I agree.
And there's no doubt that east of the Mississippi River received some very good rainfalls in late August and September, here on into October when we really don't want it. I'm not so sure how heavy or widespread those rains were west of the Mississippi. If they were, then, maybe we'll see even better than expected bean yields there, but we definitely are seeing them here in central Illinois where we got the rain.
Okay, so if the bean yield's going to be better in November and the cattle on feed numbers this week show a not a particularly good number for corn, I suppose, and maybe usage of all kinds of feed, might that be the beginning of the end, Aaron?
Well, I think we've really kind of seen the demand rationing work out a little bit here over the last few weeks with export sales. I think every Thursday morning you get a little bit of a reminder what high prices have done to the corn side. And then, the ethanol numbers continue to run in that low 80 million bushels a week that we grind, slightly below what the USDA is forecasting at this point. So, I think that's going to continue to keep some sort of lid here on prices, at least on the corn side with some of this demand concern.
Yeah, we saw 849 December corn earlier this summer, and that's when we didn't know what we had. Well, since then, we figured out what size crop we do have, and it's not much bigger than what we thought on the corn side, but at least now the farmers know what they have to sell. And we have seen the demand start to be rationed, so I don't think we have to revisit the 849 level. Maybe we can get to $8, but at those kind of levels, given that we know what we have now, those are going to be good levels to sell at.
Michael?
I think, when we looked at the 849 level, and the guys probably remember this too, a lot of calls came in and people called and said, I'm hearing $10 corn, what do you think? And I think it still remains that the beans really have to take the corn there if we're going to do it, because the corn demand just hasn't come back yet, and the beans really are what the speculators and the funds really like to go after.
Well, thank you all so much for joining us here on Commodity Week. That wraps up this October 19 edition. Aaron Curtis is with Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois. Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. And Mike Zuzolo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana.
Support for Commodity Week comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.